at session number 30388, reel 10.
Let me illustrate what can happen to you in action. I actually was involved in a small incident when our ship was hit by a shell. We were protecting a convoy which was being harassed by some E-boats, and one of these managed to get a lucky shot at us and hit us in the funnel. Now, my workstation was about 25, 30 feet away from the funnel, but inside the break of the forecastle. Now, in that particular gangway or corridor, whatever you like to call it, we call them gangways in the Navy, there's always a seaman stationed during action for damage control purposes. There are phones there for him to communicate with various parts of the ship, and he has available to him on the spot things like, if you get hit, axes and whatnot to clear things and so on and so forth. During a lull in an action, I had an urgent need to go to the heads. And as I still had my partner at work there, and he could have managed quite well on his own, I said to him, "Tony, I'm just going out to the heads." And as I came out of our cabin, there was the rating on duty in the gangway saying, and I said to him, "How's things?" And so on. And said, "Oh, it's all right." And I went to the heads. As I came out of the heads, he said, how's things? "You got any intercepts?" I said, "Yeah, we're hearing things," and so on. And I was standing opposite him, facing him, about as far away as you are from me. And which was, 3 foot, 4 foot. When suddenly there was a thump. And the next thing I see is this fellow buckles at the knees and says, "Christ, I've been hit." And I looked and I saw that his tunic at the back had a couple of tears in it. And saw that there were some holes in the curtain there. And I realized that the ship had had a hit, nothing very major, but it had a hit, and a couple of pieces of shrapnel hit him in the back. If that fellow hadn't been there at the time, I'd have had him in the front. But such is luck. I helped him to the ship's surgery, which was next door to me, actually. And the ship's doctor took care of him, and it was a fairly minor affair. And it's the only time that we suffered damage from enemy action. I think that's mostly my sea service dealt with in water. There's more sea service to come. But the war came to an end on May the 7th. We were on patrol off the East Coast, and the skipper informed us over the tannoy that the war was to end at midnight or 2 a.m. and that we were to be especially alert in case any mad suicidal German tried anything on the last night of their war. So we had quite a quiet night, and nothing happened, but we were on duty all night long. When we got back to Sheerness at 6 a.m, the skipper said, well, by that time it was officially the war was over, the skipper said, well, we can let 2/3 of the ship's company go ashore on condition that they're back by 6 o'clock the following morning and no later, because we were sailing for Grimsby at 8 a.m. with a convoy. I mean, the convoy still went on. So I went ashore, went to the station and met up with one of my fellow writer special or fellow headaches, who I knew well, and he was also going up to London. So we took a train to London and made our way to Piccadilly, visited various pubs, in none of which we were allowed to put our hands in our pockets. People were buying us drinks right, left and centre. By the time we got to Trafalgar Square, we were good and merry. Not legless, but merry, very merry. And there was a huge crowd in Trafalgar Square, and there were a few sailors purporting to be dancing the hornpipe, which we'd never been taught. and then they saw us joining. There was a big throng around us, and we were dancing what we said was a hornpipe. God knows what it was. In our drunken state, we didn't care less, couldn't have cared less. Anyway, when all that was over, and there were usual cheers and all the rest of it, we peeled off and found ourselves in the company of two girls. I remember they came from High Wycombe. I don't know why, but I remember they were from High Wycombe. We spent the rest of the day and most of the night with these two, and finished up at about 2 a.m. or something in Hyde Park, which, to put it very politely, was in continuous perpetual motion, let's put it that way. It was unbelievable. Anyway, we caught the 4 o'clock milk train back to Sheerness, and I reported back on board in due time, and we found that there were about 30 odd people from our ship who failed to make the boat, including a couple of the officers. But the skipper took it in his stride, and he didn't make anything of it, so we sailed with a diminished crew, but there was no problem. And not very long after that, I received orders to depart from HMS Holderness and to report to RNTE South Mead again, I think. And I went to South Mead, and there we had some further instruction, but only for a day or two, and were sent to Chatham Barracks. And we're kicking our heels in barracks. I was a leading hand. And when they called me on the tannoy, told me to get my gear together and to join HMS Mainel, another Hun-class destroyer, a sister ship of mine, based on Sheerness. And the Mainel had been selected for special duty, the special duty being that they were to take the naval contingent that were going to parade in Berlin in front of the heads of state in August, September, whatever it was, in 1945, as passengers. So they only had a sort of skeleton crew on board, and they wanted me to work as a translator interpreter. So I went and joined the ship and got to know the guys and so on. They shoved me in the forward mess deck, and this contingent of old sailors who were to take part in the parade arrived. Now, all of these chaps were what we call three stripers, like a sergeant's emblem, which signifies length of service. 21 years in the Navy and you've got three stripes, if you've kept your nose clean. All these were three stripers. All of them knew their Navy well enough. Sorry about that. I shouldn't see this. They knew the Navy well enough to try and get what we called a cushy billet. In other words, not serving on a ruddy bucking bronco of a destroyer, but to get a nice comfy job ashore if possible. And most of them were working ashore, if not all. Consequently, they didn't have many sea legs between them. It happened that we had a bit of a gale on the way over. So much so that after a very, very rough night, there were only two people in the forward mess deck capable of any normal movement, and I was one of them, and I was the most senior one. We had to get the mess deck straightened up. It was in a horrible mess. People had been sick, and it was a horrible job cleaning up because these fellows groaning away. They're dying off in droves. And this other fellow and I, we cleaned up as best we could, and about missed our breakfast, and about 10 o'clock went into the galley and saw the chef, who was just packing up. "Chef, we have missed our breakfast," you know, explained why. "Can you let us have a couple of eggs each and a couple of slices of bread and some fried bread and fried eggs? If you can make them for it." No, sir, I'm off duty now. He says, "Here you are, help yourselves." He gave us the necessary things. I got a frying pan. There was only room for one man at a time, and I pulled rank on the other guy. I wish I hadn't. And so I had a frying pan first and got some fat in there, fried some bread in there, took the bread out, put an egg in, oh lovely, put the second one, added all over the place. I was so fed up and so hungry, I thought, to hell with it, I'll fry it to blazes and I'll eat it. And I fried it, and it was like a piece of rubber, strapped it off on the fried bread and ate the lot without any consequences, I'm pleased to say. But definitely the second one was addled. Had the first one been addled, it would have been okay, it would have been chucked out. But I wasn't going to sacrifice them both, because I was too hungry. We took these chaps to Hamburg, where they disembarked, and we were to wait in Hamburg for them to return from Berlin about 10 days later. So we were kicking our heels in Germany. And this would be in the summer of 1945, I don't know, 4 or 5 months after the end of the war. And they allowed us ashore, and the petty officer in charge of discipline, as I said, we had a skeleton crew, said to me, will you take liberty men? Meaning, will I take charge of the parade of those who wish to go ashore that evening? I was going to go anyway as well. And you had to parade, and the officer had to say, yes, okay, you know, you can go. And one of their crew members was a coder, you know, who decoded stuff, and encoded stuff. And he was an older man who wasn't very military, if you know what I mean. So we all had to go with sidearms. I had a revolver. He had a Lanchester. A Lanchester was a naval version of a Sten gun, slightly more sophisticated looking, where you stuck the magazine in the side. And this idiot, instead of putting the magazine in his pocket, had stuck it in the side of the Lanchester. He was standing right in front of me at the time when I saw the officer coming down the gangway. I said, "Liberty man, jump!" And he banged that thing on the deck and whoop! One shell went flying past my face. The officer said, "What was that? Who fired?" And I said, "Coda so and so did, sir." The fellow was all abject. "Get back, you're not assured." So he lost his evening out. And it was strange. We went to a forces club in Hamburg in an area which was relatively undamaged. And it was strange. When we arrived there, we were taken there, in fact. When we arrived there, we saw that on one side of the street, there were dozens and dozens of girls walking up and down on their own. On the side of the force, there were dozens and dozens of soldiers walking up and down on their own. And we realized that the fraternization ban, as it was called, was still in force, because British forces were not allowed to fraternize with Germans. And the ban was to come to an end at 6 o'clock that evening. And come 6 o'clock, the little church bell or something or other, suddenly the two streams converged and saw people linking arms who knew, who'd obviously been having illicit relationships for weeks, if not months. It was the strangest sight. Well, we had a few beers and went back on board. And then I had quite an adventure, because one of the younger officers said, since we're here for 10 days, wouldn't the captain allow us to take the ship's motorboat up the Elbe to try and link up with the Russian forces, who were by that time located in a small town called Geestacht on the Elbe. So the skipper gave us permission. And he chose 10 people, myself included, obviously, because of my German knowledge. We had all our own food, well, most of our own food. We were going to scavenge for vegetables and stuff like that, or try and buy it locally. And happily, we took off from Hamburg. Once we were out of sight of the docks, the officer said, "Look, chaps, it was a boiling hot day. It must have been July or August. Definitely was up. Pardon. You can all take your shirts off, but you must wear your naval caps. and take your shirts off. So we all bare chested, naval caps on. We're going along, and we come to a sort of a shanty town outside Hamburg with a small landing stage. And the officer said, well, let's make fast here, and let's see if we can get somebody local to cook some of our stuff for us. That was where I came in. So, unload the gear. So they unloaded the gear, and the guy who was taking all the cutlery off dropped most of it in the river. And we finished up between 10 of us with about 2 forks, 1 knife, and 3 spoons. The officer said, well, really, we ought to buy some vegetables. We're going to cook some meat of some sort or another. He said to me, go and buy some vegetables and see if you can find somebody to cook this stuff for us. We'll give him some tea or cigarettes. So he sent me off with another fellow carrying sidearms. And we walked through this shanty town and saw a little place that was obviously a greengrocer. There were about 3 or 4 people queuing, chatting happily. And the minute we walked in, silence. I didn't let on anything. We just stood silently, quietly in the queue. We didn't push forward. I said to my friend, we'll take our time, you know. When the fellow had finished with these locals, I said to him in German, we would like so much beans, this, that, and some kind of them. I haven't got anything. I said, look, you either sell us some food or we will help ourselves and we will not pay you. He was very quick to serve us with everything we wanted. He tried to get out of it. I knew they were short in supply, but we were short in supply as well. So we got our necessary vegetables, then went back towards the landing stage and saw one of these sort of the wooden shacks. Or wooden houses, actually. I think they were on 2 floors. One of them looked quite neat, so I went and knocked on the door, and a young woman opened the door, and sort of all taken aback, and I said to her in German, there's nothing to worry about. We are a group of 10 sailors of the Royal Navy. We're looking for somebody who could, in return for some payment, cook us a meal, and so on. So, oh, she said, yes, of course, I will cook for you. So I had the boys bring up all the various bits they wanted, and a friend of hers, a neighbor of hers, she'd seen all this, you know, nosy, came along, she wanted to help. And she said to us, I'll be ready then and then, and so on. Then we waited, and eventually she sort of waved us up. You can eat in here. No, we'll eat on board ship, on board our boat. Well, they made us a very nice soup, the two women. They put some bacon rinds in it, you know, to give it a bit of oomph, which they had, was their own stuff, so we felt that was very generous, and we had a nice meal. And then I sent a couple of guys up, came up with a couple of guys, so we'll wash up now. No, no need. She'd lent us cutlery the lot. No, we wash up. Let's leave the stuff here. So when I gave her 40 cigarettes, you know, could have had anything I wanted from her, because that was a fortune to her at the time. And when I gave a friend 20 cigarettes, she was over the moon. They were absolutely over the moon. You know, it was such an important gift. I'd learned that because before we went on this trip, I'd been round in Hamburg with a few of the chaps and seen how greatly that town had been destroyed. There were whole streets of just rubble. Cleared away, but it was rubble. The street was there, and the people were impoverished looking, and we were approached by an old lady waving a silver pencil, a beautiful propelling pencil thing, in front of my nose saying, coffee, meaning coffee, obviously. We didn't have any coffee, we had nothing in there other than a few cigarettes on our persons. And at that time, also, we got chatted up, actually, by a couple of German girls in the park. And when they saw that I spoke German, they were all the more interested and sort of tried to get friendly. But I mean, we knew that our time there was very limited in the park, I mean. And we were chatting to them in the sun. And when a young boy suddenly came running up to them, and started swearing at them in German, sort of consulting with the enemy and all this sort of business. And I just listened to this for a minute or so, and he kept on going and telling what you'll do to them. And I jumped up and shouted at him in German, "If you're not out of here in 5 minutes, I will shoot you." And I pointed my pistol at him. I tell you, he ran off. I'm glad he did, because I wouldn't have known how to use it. Almost. We left that place along the Elbe and went down upriver further, and came, after a few hours, across a chicken farm. So our officer said, "We might as well requisition some eggs." All of them went, except for me. I was left in the boat with all the weaponry. All they were wearing was trousers. The caps were left behind. They went over the fence into this chicken farm, and there was a lot of kerfuffle going on. And then I see them all running back towards the fence, clambering over into the boat, get ready to cast off, sort of thing. And a very irate farmer waving a pitchfork, shouting imprecations at them about thieving, bloody Engländer and all that nonsense. And they each had an egg in there, in each hand. The only trouble was these were all porcelain eggs put in the nest to encourage the chickens to lay. It had eggs out of there in time. It was quite funny. They were very furious. They threw them at him, one after the other, and I suppose he was pretty grateful at that. Anyway, we eventually managed to get to Gestacht. And we made fast there and went ashore, and from judging by the graffiti and the foul language written up on various walls, we realized the British Army had been there, was there. And we went and asked somebody there, I forget whether it was the local police or whether it was somebody from the army, "Where are the Russians? We've come to, you know, offer a hand to the French Royal Navy." And we were told, "Forget it. They don't have anything to do with anybody. And if you go there, they'll likely arrest you." So the officer decided that it would be best to turn up about and go back. And we went back to Hamburg, and I think we were away 2 days. And as we were entering Hamburg, the officer said, we should brew up somewhere. So I said, "All right, we'll find somewhere." We made up fast. I saw a pub, a large pub in a built-up area. So I went in, found the owners, and I said to the lady, "If you would kindly let us brew up some tea here, we will reward you naturally," and so on. No, she said, "That's all right, yes, please." So we brewed up tea and sat in the pub drinking our tea. And of course, English tea, when you make tea, you've got a lot of residue. Tea leaves are left over and behind. And of course, you throw them away, don't you? And she came over to me and said, "Excuse me, sir. Could I ask you a favor? Are you doing something with the tea leaves?" I said, "No, we throw them away." "Oh," she said, "please, could you give them to me? I can make at least 200 cups of tea for my guests from what you've left me." I said, "You're very welcome. Yeah, they're yours. Have them." Oh, she was delighted, as was her husband. Even more when I gave them a packet of fresh tea on top of it. They were so short of things, one felt. The gratitude was out of all proportion. So we had a successful visit there and eventually returned to Sheerness in good weather and with our guests happier. I was still kept on board for another week or two, during which the ship was required to do a depth charge practice run in the North Sea. And the skipper had been sensible enough to find, via the Asdic, a shoal of fish. So we did our run where the shoal of fish was, in an area that had been designated. But in order to make sure that we should get some of these fish, he went rather slowly and lobbed the depth charge in. May have set it too shallow, I don't know what. nearly blew the stern off. The whole stern went out in the air like that. I was on deck at the time and I was hanging on for dear life, and the backside shot up like this and splashed back, and we turned about and stopped, and the sea was covered in silvery fish that had been stunned by the explosion. And over the side went those who were good swimmers, myself included, with nothing on. And buckets were lowered over the side, and we were picking these slippery fish, putting them in the buckets for about half an hour. Then we were ordered back on board. We had fresh fish for dinner, and it was whiting that day. And it was very, very good. And I'm not a fish eater. I don't particularly go for fish, but that was something a bit special. But when I finished with the Maino, I was sent back to RNT Southmead. And there I was given a very extensive test in my knowledge of German language, spoken, written, all the rest of it, as was a whole group of us. There were about 20 of us, had all been recalled. And when we inquired what was this in aid of, we were told it is in aid of determining which one of you is of a sufficiently high standard to be commissioned into the Royal Navy as an interpreter to work in Germany for the next 2 years. It would mean staying longer than originally planned. We all had to sit this exam. And my friend James, who had started out by making himself thoroughly unpopular with us, although he was Berlin-born and bred, by making nothing but anti-Semitic remarks once we were chatting in the mess whilst training, but whom I had befriended despite that, who had come around to see the error of his ways. He was actually playing devil's advocate. He was a highly intelligent man. And he and I sat the exam together with a Czech fellow and, I don't know, about 8 or 9 or 10 others. And when the results came out, James had scored 99%, the Czech fellow 98%, I had 95 or 96%, and all the others were around the 90% or just below mark. We were then all individually called in front of the CO, who explained to us officially what this was all about. And he said to James, although you have had the best score of all, I very much regret I'm unable to recommend you for a commission for the reason that you hold a Polish passport. Because at the time there were two Polish governments, the Polish government in exile and the communist-dominated Polish governments in Warsaw. Therefore, I was told, the officials feel that your loyalty cannot be guaranteed. And they said exactly the same to me. So neither James nor I got commissioned. The Czech got a commission and worked in Germany, and several of the others who'd scored lower marks also got commissioned, because the only thing that disqualified was that we held a Polish passport. The fact that neither of us had ever been to Poland, spoke Polish, had any Polish culture, cut no ice. We were Poles, therefore our loyalty was unguaranteeable. I thought it was, at the time, it didn't bother me. In retrospect, it was short sight about then so much of these things is. Anyway, after that, I had a spell in Chatham Barracks, where, as a writer special, I'm sorry. After that, I was transferred to Fettes College in Edinburgh with a small